it doesn't stop there, bro. I do the x-ray stuff, the radiation stuff, and bro, I come off the medication after 9 months. You're supposed to be on it 3 years. I come off on 9 months because I went from palliative to curative, right? And then there's no cancer detected in my body anymore because the radiation killed the five spots and the thing. Because now, a year later, my PSAs are still 0.16, which means no prostate cancer anywhere. So nobody can tell me that it's not God. For me to say that it's not God now, after God answered exactly what I asked for, and I have a paper that shows this thing was killed by hormone pills, bro, when I think about that, it's mind-blowing. So I've had people tell me, well, it could be chance, it could be this, it could be that. No, it can't. I asked for something, and it was exactly delivered as I asked.
The following podcast is a Carolina Boys production. Welcome back, everyone, to Crime and Entertainment. I am your host, Hollywood Way. Now, today we've got my good friend Ciro DiPaggio coming back on the show. If you remember, he's been on here a few times. He had his film come out last year, The Mob King. I was fortunate enough to go down to Hollywood, Florida last year to the Hard Rock Hotel, the Guitar Hotel, for the premiere of that particular film. It's a great, great time. We're actually having another one coming up for the film we're going to be talking about today that he has coming out, Silent Partners, as well as Ciro, who details that he was battling some serious, serious cancer while finishing up Mob King and doing some other things. And brother, let me just tell you his story and what he's accomplished here and what he's, you know, his testimony that he shares is nothing short of amazing. Let's get right into it here with Ciro DiPaggio on Crime and Entertainment.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Crime and Entertainment. I have here a familiar face, but it has been a minute since he's been on. Please welcome Ciro DiPaggio. Ciro, welcome back to Crime and Entertainment, my friend.
What's up, my brother? How are you?
I'm good. I think the last time you were on, we were doing the premiere party for The Mob King, which I attended at the day or night club at the Hard Rock Hotel, the Guitar Hotel.
Yeah,
it was a really fun time. And then we were able to catch up at the Silent Partners Dances with Films Film Festival back in December. Yeah, I was able to partake in that. And I understand we've done a little tweaking to that. And you've also got a couple of other things coming out in the works. So kind of give us the scoop on what's going on with Silent Partners and what all you got coming in the works. A lot of moves making. So.
Yeah, so, you know, like you said, last time we talked, we actually did the interview from the Hard Rock right there on the floor. I was in the casino, remember?
Yep.
That was pretty cool. Yeah, so, you know, that went off without a hitch. That was a great experience. And Mob King has been doing really well. It was well received, so that's good, you know. And, yeah, so Silent Partners, you know, we didn't really tweak it. It was a pilot. Now I've turned it into a major feature, you know, because it's just like with anything, you know, when you're trying to get somewhere as a filmmaker or whatever, and then you actually have one under your belt, now you have the opportunity to talk with actual distributors. Because the funny thing about this business is that I literally spent a whole year trying to talk to even one distributor, and I'm talking about real distributors. I'm not talking about, you know, mom and pop distributing, you know. And the wall of silence that exists to break through, like if you go to any site for, you know, anybody like Lionsgate or any of these type of people, it'll say on there, do not send your stuff. Unsolicited material will get returned. Unsolicited material can be stolen. Unsolicited material becomes the property of them, but they will not return anything from you, right? So it's, you know, you have to have an agent or, you know, somebody that they recognize as an agent for them in order to even see it. But then the odd thing is once you finally are in that particular realm, then everybody's available. It's like I got all of them where I call right to the people and talk to them. Hey, they're like, hey, Zero, what's up, man? And it's so dumbfounding to me on, when I tell you I sat in an office for 8 hours a day trying to crack this code to get through to people before that premiere, before AFM, while the movie was getting edited and everything to get, you know, somehow to get people to watch it or to, however it was going to work because it was a learning process. Mm-hmm. I didn't get one successful move, bro. Not one. But then we went to AFM. People seen it. It screened there. It was a big, the big hit there at AFM. And literally a week later, I have 15, 20 big time distributors at my beck and call. So now, well, not at my beck and call, but I mean where I can just call them and have a relationship with them. So now it's basically whatever I'm going to do, they want to have a part of. You know what I mean? So
it's kind of like they needed a finished product in front of their faces before they took you serious. And what you guys put together and with Mob King, and I urge anybody that they haven't seen it yet to go give it a look and check it out. It's a unique spin on the gangster film. Like you said, you put your own spin on it. It's not your typical gangster film, but what you guys were able to pull off with the actors that you did, you had a mix of great veteran actors like Robert Lasarda, James Russo, mixed with some newer people on there. But the finished product looked like a $1 million budget movie, which even $1 million is, you know, not a lot in Hollywood's terms today. I mean, you're talking an average movie is almost $100 million now, you know, with Marvel and everything. It's crazy. You guys look like you've done that on a huge, huge budget. And I know once they seen the product that you finish for what you guys are actually able to do it for, that had to be a really like an eye-catching thing for these distributors.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we did it for, you know, a lot less than $1 million, but you're right. That's what they thought. And what's funny to me is like low budget in Hollywood is considered $15 million.
Yeah.
Like for $1 million film, people look at it as a micro mini budget. It's like the lowest form you could get. And it's funny because like, you know, everybody likes to take shots. You know what I'm saying? They like to put you down or whatever. There's a contingent of people. Like, it seems that social media, a lot of people, all they care about doing is just jumping down whoever's throat they could jump down. It's like they, you know, there's like a whole slew of them that just want to criticize everything and anything. It doesn't matter what it is. Like, 10 people could be saying, oh, this is really good. And the other person would be like, oh, it's low budget. And it's like, it's low budget. You know, what other type of budget is it for an independent filmmaker?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Everything's low budget for an independent filmmaker. You know what I'm saying? What film have you made?
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Exactly. That's always what I say because, you know, I heard something a long time ago and it was with the podcast and somebody said, you know, it's better to make something and be criticized than to make nothing and criticize others.
Yeah,
and you know, no matter what you do, you're going to have those detractors and haters, but especially in a case with yourself, that percentage is very small and they're definitely the minority. I've watched you from the very small mobisodes that you guys did on that pilot grow and your following grow, your fan base grow from, you know, your near death experience you had in Spain. I mean, I've watched you kind of grow as a person, grow as a filmmaker, grow as an actor. And that's another thing that I love. And I love having you on because you're very accessible to the people. You know, a lot of times when people start getting to, you know, different levels of success, it, not that you necessarily want to pull away, but you become very busy. You have a lot going on, but you've always maintained that, you know, time to go on and address the fans and kind of give them updates and let them know and even reach out to some of them and have them in some small parts in your films.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times people have to become a little more reclusive with it is because you get some people that have weird obsessions with you. And then those weird obsessions turn into hate fest. You know what I mean? Where it's just like, I gotta, you know, I don't like to shed light on anybody in particular because I don't like to give anybody any of that attention they're looking for. But, you know, I've had a couple guys, not girls, you know, guys that are literally so obsessed that they make posts continuously about me 3 years after I've met them. Three years after I even stopped talking to them. You know what I mean? And every day it's something. And it's always the same thing. Like, there are no secrets about anything. Like, you know, I have an adopted name. I changed my name. That's no secret. There's literally 500 people that I went to school with between elementary, junior high, senior high, part-time college, all of these things. People I was in a joint with, they all know that name. It's not like you've discovered some, you know, arc, you know, you've discovered this huge thing that nobody in the world knows. It's like, you know, but the fact of the matter is I don't have one drop of blood in it. So why would I keep that name? So once I was able to establish with DNA and everything else, I'm like, okay, let me write this ship too. Yeah. You know, because I want to write all these different ships. So when people want to say, oh, he used to be a bad guy, or he used to do this, or he used to do that, it's like, who the fuck cares what I used to do? Exactly. I'm not doing it no more. And last time I checked, I went someplace that punished me for those things I used to do, and it's a wrap.
For a lot of years you did.
So here I come now, and I'm doing something completely different, completely good for people. I do the right things. I don't cheat. I don't lie. I don't steal. I don't do all nothing. I do everything I can to get the good karma in my life, you know, so that things will work in my favor. And I'm really fearful of that fact about tilting the hands of karma the wrong way. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And we can discuss that a little in a few about the cancer and all that kind of stuff that I just beat. So it's like, you know, with the exception of a few things like pedophiles, rapists, you're something extreme like that. You know, I went to in for racketeering. You know what I mean? It's like, come on. You know, and I did a lot of time for it because, you know, I wouldn't give up people. Then you got these certain people be like, oh, he's this. He's a rat. He's this. Yeah. Who did I rat on? You know, last time I checked, rats don't do 20 years. Yeah. 7 years I've been doing this. Where is the person? You know what I'm saying? Where are the people? Where are the gangsters? Where is it? But everybody else who's allegedly done that, you know, it's like they have a long list. You can see it clearly. It's everywhere. People will pull up one article that gets me confused with one guy, and all of a sudden they clip that and be like, oh, look, it's this guy, it's this guy. And I don't care. It's like, whatever. You think whatever you want. It doesn't matter to me because I'm not auditioning to be a member of your criminal crew regardless.
Right.
So it doesn't matter to me whether you think that or not. What matters to me is this is what I do now. I'm doing it pretty good and at a high level that A-level people now in Hollywood are coming to me to do things. Like, for example, what we'll talk about is Danny A is now the director of a good run from Daniel Knopf's option, who's in business with me now, who was the writer on The Blacklist, who created HBO's Carnival series with an $8 million per episode budget 20 years ago. Okay, top of the line, A-list guys. You know, so all that petty stuff with all these little chirpers, you know, that it just gets quieter and quieter because at some point you're not saying nothing new. You're not backing up anything you're saying. You understand? There's nothing there, you know? So it's like, okay, now you're just some guy that's pew-pewing in the dark and nobody wants to hear it no more. And you got five people left following you, you know? It's just ridiculous. It's sad. And like some people, you know, a couple of them will post things like, how does Mob King have 20,000 reviews? They must have bought reviews. People don't understand how that works, man. I went and tried to find out for myself. Like, if you go and put on a review at Rotten Tomatoes, they don't allow spamming and stuff like that. You have to have a real email with a real account that's then verified. They send you something because I did it today to see, you know, because some of it does look weird. But there's people in other countries that are doing this. India is a big country where Mob King's flying off the handle right now for some reason. I don't know if it's bootleg or whatever, but those people are watching like crazy. And their English is a little weird, you know, and they still do that kind of stuff. But long story short, if it was all bad, then the reviews would be people would be like, oh, yeah, those reviews are on point. But because they're all good, it's like, oh, those must be bad reviews. They must be bots. They must be AI. Those places, I mean, IMDb is owned by Amazon. You understand? The biggest company in the world. They're not going to let just people, like, oh, yeah, let's pad these results, you know? I mean, it's like people just jump to that. And it really is like, you guys really don't have anything going on in your life, do you, to say that, instead of just like, hey, good job, man. Maybe the movie wasn't for me, but at least you made a movie.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't necessarily have to fit everyone's cup of tea, but when you think about the full body of work that, you know, you guys put together with the well-known actors you had, with the mix of the, you know, the newer actors. I mean, I thought it was a very well done film, man. I mean,
yeah.
You know, people can't go into every gangster film expecting another Goodfellas. There's only one Goodfellas, yeah. You know?
Well, we don't have the money deal. To do that.
Exactly. You know, you were able to pull it off and a very, I thought just the cinematography on it. I mean, being in Florida obviously helps. It's a beautiful place, but the cinematography that you guys had was second to none. And I want to capitalize on what you were saying there, because I don't remember the last time I've really checked out the number on there, but I know at one time your page on Facebook was over 1 million followers.
Yeah, I think it's like 1.9.
Okay, so you're almost at 2 million. So
actually, at 2 million. I was at like 2.1, but I've lost, I don't know, maybe 2,000 or whatever. I guess people get tired of my face. Who knows?
So you take a 10% of that, you know, or even a smaller number. If those people, if those dedicated fans that have been following you, if they go and they leave a review, it's not unheard of that you have access to that many people. You know what I'm saying? If you're loyal fans, that's a small percentage of over 2 million people to go leave, you know, a review. So it's not like that's unfathomable. It's not like you come out of nowhere. Nobody had any idea who you were. It was just this B movie that showed up on Tubi or something like that, and people clicked on it, and all these thousands of people watched it. The Mob King largely had been built and grown over a period of time. So you have people waiting on this. Yeah, organically. You have people waiting. Like I said, it started as a, you know, one little episode pilot you guys shot. It was going to be a TV series. You wound up getting sick. You know, then you decided just to do the whole movie. So it was a long time coming. You had people waiting on that. I mean, I was one of them. I'm sitting there. I'm like, you know, God, I can't wait for it. I've been waiting for so long. You know, it's like it was part of my movie. I'm waiting on this, you know, you guys to finish.
Yeah. I mean, like IMDb has an 8.4 or an 8.5 rating. That's really high, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, somebody wants to say, oh, they must have bought reviews or something. Dude, there's 20,000 reviews. Who the hell can afford, if you could, to buy and have somebody go and type 600 words as a review or to do? I don't know what the process is. I really don't on that IMDb stuff, but I just know that the numbers, what are we supposed to say when we watch Amazon and it shows everybody else's numbers? You know, are we supposed to say, what is it? That one that's Game of Thrones, for example, it's like 9.7 or something, right?
Yeah.
It's like unbelievable number, but that's my favorite, one of my favorite series ever. But am I going to sit here because I don't like it and say, oh, they must have bought reviews. HBO must have bought up all the reviews. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, come on, man. You know, unfortunately for me, you're right. There's not a lot of hate because, you know, I don't get on there and boast and beat my chest or whatever, you know, and say, yeah, I'm the greatest, this and that, because I don't think that at all. You know, I still cringe a little bit when, you know, when I see myself on film, you know what I mean? So I'm trying to get to the point where I'm just creating film and nobody sees my face anymore. Cause you know, I post less now, you know, it's just like, I really don't like having to do it. And Facebook makes it hard. They give you all of these followers, but it's the same 500 people.
Yeah.
Now, that's a lot more than what most people get, but every social media person throttles your fan base because they want you to pay.
Yeah.
So it's like, they keep telling me, hey, your page is doing great. Boost your posts. And it's like you're paying to get your product, whatever it is you posted that day, in front of your own followers. People who went out of their way to click follow on you, but I have to pay for them to see what I got. That's a racket all in itself. You want to talk about racketeering? I mean, come on, man. That's crazy. So I don't do that. You know, so all of my stuff is organic. It went from like 2,000 likes to maybe now 300, 400, but the engagement is there. You see that? That's still 100, 150, 200 comments of people leaving real stuff, not like, hey, guy, how you doing? You know, it's like, so I don't really, you know, I like to support what people are doing. I like to support people's projects. I like to hire people that aren't anywhere. Yeah, I have to get names. Like Robert Davi now is attached to me. And you know how he got attached to me? He loved Mob King. So he called James Russo. Man, that movie was great. Cyril was great. I want to work with him. And now we're doing three projects. He's the one that introduced me to Daniel Knopf. Okay, so you're talking about a guy who's at the top of the food chain, man. Blacklist was a number one show when he was writing for them. Seasons mm-hmm. 2, 3, 4. He's writing all of that crazy dialogue for one of the best TV actors there is, James Spader. And here I am walking into Legoland with my kids on a Sunday and Daniel Knopf calls me on my favorite TV show, The Blacklist. That's the universe, man. That's the universe. And I have to tell him, hey, man, I'm walking into Lego, man. Can I call you on Monday? The biggest call of my life up to this point, right? And then he wants to sell me his option for $300,000. I tell him, man, if I had $300,000, I'd make a movie.
Yeah.
No, I don't have that. So I go meet him anyway. And after that meeting, now we're partners, 50-50 on it for free. And now I get to raise the money because now I got an A-list director attached to it. So now I'm going to make a movie that's $5 to $10 million. You know what I mean? Sorry, bro. The bugs are coming out flying around. But yeah, so, you know, it's a learning curve and, you know, a gradual thing. And, you know, I don't pay no attention to it anymore. You know, I don't care who's got anything negative to say because my own fan base will attack them. You know what I'm saying? So
I've seen that. I've seen that firsthand.
Yeah. And yeah, so, you know, and then they message everybody, hey, this guy's no good. This guy's no good. This guy's no good. They send me screenshots. It's like, I don't care. I tell people, I don't care. Don't send me nothing. I don't want to see nothing. I'm just putting it out. If you like it, comment on it. I still try to respond to everybody's comments. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because I can't obviously sit here all day and go to people's pages and stuff. But on my comments, I still try to give the love back to the people because what happens is, so you know, when a movie comes out as an independent film, the way it's explained to me by Gravitas is generally the movie will have a slight bump when it comes out, any independent film, friends, family, whatever, and then it drops off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
So people could say, oh, it's highly overrated. I don't know why so many people are putting ratings, but you know what? In the first 6 months, Mob King is in the black. It's doing what most independent films do not do. It's in the profit zone after 6 months. So you can't tell me these people aren't watching the film because the money says they are. You see what I'm saying? So that's all that matters. You could talk all you want to talk, but the bank account's getting padded.
Yeah.
So that's where the answers are. Because guess what? The fan base is what puts it into the algorithm. When you release a movie on Amazon, if people are buying it, for example, when Mob King came out, it was $2.99 to rent and like $9.99 to buy.
Mm-hmm.
4 hours later, it was $6.99 to rent and $12.99 to buy because Amazon boosted it because of the amount of people buying it. So it goes into their algorithm. It ended up on what's trending now with Mario Lopez. We're getting videos from all the hotels where people are like, hey, look, and there's Mario. Hey, what's trending now? Mob King, da, 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 da. So that was cool. You know what I mean? But all of those things, Tubi, all these different platforms, they all have algorithms just like Facebook. So if people are clicking it, they push it. Because guess what? Amazon gets 50% of whatever they sell. That's their cut. So if a movie's $12.99, I get 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even get that because the distributor gets 20% of that.
Right.
See what I'm saying? So, and I don't even get that because Anthony gets it right now. Because Anthony needs to get all his funds back because he's got to pay for the movie. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's a rough business to be in, especially when you're trying to get that pipeline going. But
that's what you've done now. You've got that pipeline going. You know, just say if you break even through all the blood, sweat, and tears you put in Mob King, it's now led you to this position to put you in this place with these guys, these actors, these directors for your next budget that's, you know, 3-4 times bigger than the previous one. Then it's going to get to the point to where, you know, the returns will come in. And I've seen you throw your projects together and, you know, you'll tell me about them. And it's crazy because I'll see them when you mention them a year or two, you know, beforehand. And then I see them come to fruition. I remember you talking about Silent Partners years ago.
Yeah.
And then I was able to hit that film festival in December. I remember you talking about Suitcasing a long time ago. Now that's kind of coming to fruition. And a thing I will mention, you've been doing all this while battling some serious health issues. And, you know, having to do all this by itself is enough task for one individual, you know, trying to make it in this business, juggle everything you're trying to juggle. to do it while you're battling what you were going through health wise is even another thing. If you're comfortable, if you want to share kind of what you went through and where you're at, because I know you just did have a major surgery recently. You look like you're getting along pretty well. You're built like a tank, man. What's going on with your health?
Well, you know, I was in Spain, 4 years ago. I had perforated diverticulitis with complications and then septic shock. It has like a 12% survival rate. I'm in another country. We're on lockdown because of COVID. My wife can't come see me. I'm in ICU. It's just a horrible experience. I survived that. I get out. I lost 70 pounds. I have a bag on my stomach. I'm like, screw this, man. I'm going back to America. So they let us start flying out of the country. I told the TV deal, I'm out of here. I'm going to get this stuff off of my stomach and I'm going to get myself together, right? And what's miraculous about that is that not only do I put the weight back, but then we use the first 20 minutes of the film that was filmed in 2019. And then here we are in 2022 filming with it. So my physique, and you see how I look in the movie, it matched how it was 3 years earlier, even after losing that 70 pounds and everything, you know, because I don't use things that make my body get bigger. You know what I'm saying? So it's like a natural thing to where it's at. So even if I just eat, my body gets back, because I spent 20, 30 years working out nonstop. You know what I mean? Right. So that whole muscle has memory thing seems pretty accurate. And then at the end of filming Mob King, I get diagnosed with cancer, stage 4 metastatic prostate cancer. And I'm like, where the hell did this come from? But I don't tell nobody that. You know what I'm saying? I still keep filming. I still keep starting treatment and all of these things. And so when we go to Cleveland Clinic and they tell my wife, you know, it doesn't look good, you know, because it's in 8 spots. It's in my ribs. It's in my iliac bone. It's in my lymph nodes around the prostate. So the way that stuff works is when you have prostate cancer outside of the prostate in more than 5 areas, they put you on what is called palliative care, because there's no way for them to kill all of the spots, right? Mm-hmm. So 5 is the maximum. And I had 8. Okay, when it got discovered, my PSA was 68.0. My urologist said in his 30 years, he's only seen 7 people with a prostate score that high. The average for you, like you, without any prostate issues, is probably 1.5. Mine was 68.0.
Jeez.
If your prostate is 5.0, you have to go get checked because you probably have cancer starting somewhere, right? So that's what I will tell people who's watching, man. If you're over 45, if you're doing testosterone treatment, if you're doing anything that elevates your testosterone, that's what fuels prostate cancer. And that's why it's so rampant right now, because everybody does TRT. They're not doing it for bodybuilding. They're doing it for, you know, what they say, you know, as far as making them sleep better and all this other kind of stuff. But mm-hmm. It's an epidemic. These people tell me at the Cleveland Clinic, they got more cases diagnosed every day because of that, right? So long story short, they tell my wife, you know, we've got to see, hopefully he responds to the medication. Hopefully it's not genetic. He's so young, this and that, blah, blah, blah. Well, I'm not a firm believer in God prior to this, right?
Right.
And so I do what most people do, is I reach out to something that people say works, right? So I make a prayer to God, mm-hmm. and I say flat out, look, man, if you could keep me around for my little son, you know, and create a miracle here, I will take every opportunity to let people know that this was a miracle, right? And I said clearly that I will use my platform to tell anybody and everybody that it was God, right? So I asked this right when I'm diagnosed, okay? Here's the thing. I'm at a 68.0. They start me. I didn't want to do chemo because I'm filming that short film Cherry Picker at the time, a year and a half ago, right? So they're like, well, you know, you should do the chemo. I'm like, no, I'm not doing chemo. I don't want my hair falling out. I'm trying to get something done, right? So all I do is 2 hormone pills, a hormone shot and hormone pills, this thing called Erleada, right? And the shot that they give, which is standard with prostate. I can't remember it now, but it's something with a P. So you take that and it drains all of the testosterone out of your body. And that's what the palliative care is, right? The hormone treatments do not cure cancer, but bro, they make you like a zombie. You feel like The Walking Dead. Nothing appeals to you at all in life. You're just numb. And I mean, you can't explain it into words that you have no desire to do anything. You're exhausted and you have zero testosterone. I mean, it's like my reading was minus 12. That's castration levels. There's no test because that's the only thing that makes the cancers go down. They have you on it for 3 years and then you get what is called the holiday until it comes back, and it always comes back. And then there's resistant drugs. And then after that, when it comes back, you're dead. So maybe you have a 5-year run, maybe you have a 3-year run, maybe you have a 10-year run. That's the palliative care. Okay. I start on it. They come out with this thing called a PSMA-2 scan where they can see exactly where it is in your body. If you have to have cancer, prostate cancer is the one you want to have because it will tell you exactly where it is, right? So I start the hormone treatments. It goes from 68 to 15. That in itself is an incredible drop. It was so incredible that my urologist and whatever they call the cancer guy, I can't remember all these different names, but the guy that managed my cancer, he wanted to do the PSMA test too again because he's like, there's no way. We either had a wrong reading there and it wasn't as bad because it doesn't drop that fast, right? I'm like, all right, so I go do it again. And the second one comes out 2 months later. And bro, I shit you not, and I could back this up with paperwork, right? Like most people say they can't prove God. I can prove God. I have medical paperwork that shows that while on hormone treatment only, 3 of my spots were killed, dead, enabling me to go from palliative to curative care, right?
That's huge.
So that in itself is crazy. Then when you're on curative care, you have to be approved for insurance. It's $1 million for this radiation, right? They don't approve it if you have 8 spots. But 3 exactly put it at 5, which enables me curative care. It doesn't stop there, bro. I do the x-ray stuff, the radiation stuff, and bro, I come off the medication after 9 months. You're supposed to be on it 3 years. I come off on 9 months because I went from palliative to curative, right? And then there's no cancer detected in my body anymore because the radiation killed the 5 spots and the thing, because now a year later, my PSAs are still 0.16, which means no blood, no prostate cancer anywhere. So nobody can tell me that it's not God. For me to say that it's not God now, after God answered exactly what I asked for, and I have a paper that shows this thing was killed by hormone pills, my oncologist, that's the name of it, my oncologist, he says, you understand that hormone treatments do not kill cancer, right? And I'm like, I guess. But bro, when I think about that, it's mind blowing. So I've had people tell me, well, it could be chance, it could be this, it could be that. No, it can't. I asked for something and it was exactly delivered as I asked. So that's why you just got 5 minutes on God, man, because I can prove God with paperwork on medical tests. And my sitting here a year later, where I was only in treatment for 9 months on stage 4 metastatic. So when I'm here to testify on that, you know?
When I seen you at the day or night club, you know, you could tell there was obviously, you know, a change in your physique a little bit. Where were you at in the treatment at that point? Because in December, when I seen you for Dances with Films, you looked like a totally different guy. And I could tell you were weak, you know, at that one. It was, you know, which it was hot in there. It was a ton of people. You're shaking everybody's hand. You're up under the lights and the pictures and everything. But you could just tell, you know, it was taking a little toll. Where were you at that point?
30 pounds lighter. At the premiere, in the middle of the treatment, because that's another thing. It takes away your appetite. It's like the whole nine yards, man. You just shrivel up into a prune.
Yeah.
And then when you saw me at Dances with Films, that was a whole, 15, 16 months later. I had already been off of treatment for 7 months. So now I'm like I am now, you know, or I'm coming back. You know what I mean? So you can see, oh, this person isn't sick anymore, you know? So that's a testament there. You know what I mean? So, you know, God is real, people, man. If you need proof of it, that's the facts right there. So let me change the subject for you and tell you what's going on, because I know we've been on for a while here. So Silent Partners is now a feature film. It has James Russo. It has Gary Pastore, Mike Marino, Joseph D'Onofrio, and all the names you know. Nick Vallonga, who was the Academy Award winner for Green Book, the Tony Lip story, mm-hmm. Saul Stein from The Deuces on HBO, a lot of big names. Really good story. In my opinion, it's probably a lot better than Mob King. It's more mob related that people like and generate, you know, the whole mafia vibes that people dig. And it's coming out as a feature. It'll be released in the summer. Suitcasing is a term used in prison for guys who bring in, you know, contraband, right? Stuff. So I was going to change the name because unless you have familiarity with that, a lot of people don't understand, like, what are you going on a vacation? What is it? You know, it's like, you know, but
they quickly understand how that works.
Yeah. So my thought process behind it was they'll know what it means after they see the film. Yeah. So the 10-minute funny clip that it's been on Amazon and everybody's seen, you know, that's obviously not going to be used, but we've made a whole film on it, script, and we're going to be shooting that. Robert Davi is even going to be in that. He's going to play a ghost of convicts past. All right. So Robert Davi has been in like 200 movies, been in Goonies, been a bad guy in the 007. He's been in movies with Schwarzenegger, Die Hard. You know, ton of movies, Mob yeah. Town with Danny A, you know, so it's like for him to want to be in my prison comedy
yeah.
and do it for me like a favor, you know what I'm saying? It's like unheard of, right? So he's going to play the ghost of convicts past. So my character, Capo, killed him in prison, right? So he's in the afterlife now, but he can't move on because he was a bad guy in real life. So the deal that he's orchestrated is that if he can convert me and get me to, you know, whatever, take the Holy Spirit or believe in God or whatever, then it'll help him atone for his sins to get into the heaven. And we got these whole funny things, right? So we're going to have like this Santeria ritual done by some Dominicans and Cubans for his ghost that it gives him the ability to touch things.
Ah. Right? So, I'm really looking forward. That's going to be a comedic aspect, which is you know, something we haven't seen out of you yet. But I've also seen you in person and you talk, and you have those chops to pull that off, like a Joe Pesci. You know, you can flip.
Yeah, yeah. So you know that's going to be fun to do. You know, it's got Anthony Corona in it. You know, he is a great actor. Oh, yeah. He's going to be playing a skinhead. You know.
Like he did with Oz, I think. Well, no, he was an Italian.
He was in prison. He played Frank Urbina in Oz, which was a great character for 3 years. He's the guy that stabbed the black guy that was the popular face of Oz in the wheelchair.
In the wheelchair.
You know, he was one of the best roles that you could have in that show he had. So, yeah, he's a great actor, great friend. And he's another one that's going to work for nothing for me because this is a low-budget film. I get people to put enough just to make the film, you know what I mean? But at least I get it made, right?
Yep.
So, so then other people come to you and they help you because of the type of person you are, whatever the reason is, man, but they're there, you know? Mm-hmm. And then we got James Bishop who plays the opposite of me on it. So it's going to be fun. We're going to knock that out. And then the ministry is going to come. That's like it's basically Kingsman meets Sons of Anarchy.
Right.
So it's this, you know, nefarious group of power wielders, you know, and they go after these guys that are like this trafficking ring and stuff like that around the world, like the Jeffrey Epstein type people. Mm. And the agents of the ministry masquerade as a biker gang.
Okay. Right?
So like one of the lines in the movie is when they ask why a biker gang, and one of the girls like says, who do you ever see fuck with a biker gang?
Yeah.
That makes sense. Right.
That's pretty good point.
So then, yeah, we got that. And then of course, after that, it'll be a good run, which is really an amazing script because, you know, it's like when somebody like this writes something, you know, it's like, that's the Goodfellas level. That's the casino level. So I'll give you an idea what Good Run is like. Okay. So the movie opens up with these two hitmen. It's 1963. JFK has been whacked. And these two hitmen are showing up at this hotel. And behind the door are three other hitmen. These three other hitmen think these two guys are coming to pay them for the hit they just did. But instead they get whacked. Right. So as the two characters are leaving, which one of them is me. So when the characters are leaving, we hear laughing on the floor and coughing up of blood. And so we walk over there and the guy's laughing and he's like, you guys are dead. And we're like, we're dead. Look at you. You're full of holes, not us. Right. And so he's like, nah, man, you don't understand. The same people who sent you to kill us, they're going to send them after you because we just whacked JFK. So then it cuts to these guys driving in the car. And they're like, what do you think? What do you make of that, man? I mean, what? And the other guy's like, nah, he was delusional. He's dying. I mean, come on, let's go. And they go into this diner, right? So picture like a Quentin Tarantino style scene.
That's what I'm hearing right now. Pulp Fiction-esque type scene. So yeah.
There's like these guys, they're sitting at the diner and his friend goes, hey, look at those three guys at the door. By the time he turns, the character's pulling out the gun and now everybody's shooting. So now you got everything. You got the cook running out from behind the counter, getting on the table with a rifle. All of these people are shooting in this Texas diner. Pow, 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 pow. Crazy ass shit, right? These two hitmen escape out of it, right? So now they're like, man, this is serious. How are we going to figure out who's doing it, man? We're done. We're done, right? And they go, oh, we're going to go see, I forget the character's name, but it's a woman in power, right? That gave them the job. So they go see her. While they're sitting there with her, she gets a phone call. So she hangs up and says, well, fellas, you had a good run. That's where the movie comes from. And they're like, what are you talking about? And she goes, you both have a price on your head, $100K each. And so they're friends with her. And she sent them on the job. She goes, well, they're like, well, you got to tell us who hired us, man, so we could try to do something about it. So she gives them the gangster in Miami. So now they go to this gangster's house. They get the whole cool scene where they kill him, his dog, everybody else. And then it leads them to a general in Cuba. And then the general in Cuba leads them to FDR. J. Edgar Hoover. Yeah. And then from Hoover, they're in France, Cannes. And they're going up this totem pole, whacking everybody to get to the person who ultimately is responsible for wanting JFK dead, which I'm not going to say anything else about that. But
right.
But what a hell of a ride, man. And when you're reading the script and to know that I control the rights to it and the option to it, I'm the one that hired Danny A, you know, and it's like, okay, this is real Hollywood movie making happening right here. You know what I mean? Like the guy that I spoke to, Chuck Pacheco, he's with LBI, right? He manages Leonardo DiCaprio, Jennifer Lawrence, Downey Jr., all these big guys, and Danny A. So now I'm on the phone right here on this patio negotiating with these guys to get Danny A officially signed on as the director for A Good Run, which I've done. So now A-list writer, the top manager in Hollywood, and A-list director all coming together. So you see the progression, like you said. You remember me 7 years ago, nothing but a hothead on the internet here. You know what I mean? And now it's like, okay, you know, you get used to society, used to this, used to that. How does a business work? And eventually, you don't worry about what's the old saying? The lion isn't concerned with the sheep. I'm not worried about the little chirping dogs anymore because now I'm on a level of production and doing things where it doesn't matter how much noise you make. The old saying, if a tree falls in the forest and no one's around to hear it, does it matter?
Yeah.
Like people will say to me, they'll be like, hey, you know, so-and-so said something bad about you. I said, let me tell you something. If I'm walking by on the street and a bum starts cursing at me and 12 people hear it, do you think I care?
Yeah.
There's no difference.
Yeah.
There's no difference. So what? Let him and his 10 friends talk all they want. I could care less because there's 1,000 other people that can't wait for the movie to come out.
Yeah. And you got money to go make, you know, and that's.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing is like, you have never been like, okay, I made this movie. I told you guys I'd get it done and then sit back. It's keep it rolling.
Tell you why that is, man. You know, we can close it down like that is that I feel like I'm on the clock now.
Right.
You know what I mean? So God has blessed me in so many different ways. And now I know it was God. Right. So now I know the whole karma thing. If I had come out and I had stayed on the whole fuck everybody. I don't know if I could cuss on here, but if I can't, just blink it out. Screw everybody. You know, I'm going to do whatever I want. I'm to, you know, take this, take that, whatever. You know, it's like a lot of ignorant people are, right?
Yeah.
If I had stayed on that course, I would have died in Spain.
Yeah.
God kept me around for a reason because maybe when I came out, I changed my life around. He gave me a family. I missed all of that with my first family. All of my kids grew up with me away, right? Biggest hole in your heart you'll ever have. But now, I have an experience to get to experience that again. I get to wake up every day with my sons. I get to do things with them every day. I get to do all of the things that I missed. And I get diagnosed with cancer. And so it's like, okay. And it's not just like, oh, we caught it early. I've caught it late as shit. What are you talking about? You know what I mean? You're like, man, you're on life support here, man. And then to have that freaking miraculous turnaround that is proof. Like, I'm a guy that needs proof on everything, you know? Mm-hmm. Don't tell me what, in fact, I don't even want proof. You're telling me about something, I don't care. That's that person's life. It doesn't bother me, man. Everybody should leave everybody alone. Let them do what they do. However they do it. Why do you waste your time on it, you know? But anyway, I have proof for me. God has said to me, here's your proof, man. You were dying of cancer. You were dying in Spain. I've given you a family. You laugh in my face about this. I promise you, you're going to get hit by a bus tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm on the clock. Like, how much time do I have to make good projects, get a good legacy for my older children, my grandchildren, my young children? However much time it is, I'm on a mission to build that legacy to where it didn't matter what I did before I was 50. It matters what I did after I was 50. You know what I mean? That debt to society was paid.
Yeah.
And it wasn't something to be embarrassed of. Racketeering, if you have to have something, that's the badge of honor you want. It wasn't racketeering for murder. It wasn't racketeering. It was racketeering for making money, business violations. Mm-hmm. So you can't hang nothing on my head. I'm not a pedophile. I don't beat women like a lot of these other jokers out there do. I'm not, you know, I don't do none of that kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And when it boils down to it, if you're a good guy and you put out good karma into the universe and you do good things for people, man, that thing's going to answer you. It's going to put you on that path with people who are like-minded. And now I'm surrounded by people who are nothing but positive, and my life and my career is just skyrocketing. So I don't even care. Talk whatever negative stuff you want, because the only people listening to it is you and your wife or you and your son or whoever you're talking to it about. Nobody else cares. Yeah. They're watching the results on the scoreboard. And the scoreboard right now is me winning and you non-existent. So keep barking. You know, until you can make any movie, you shouldn't be talking about how bad someone else makes a movie.
Nah, I agree with that 100%. And I've enjoyed, as a fan, from a fan's perspective, to be able to go on this ride with you. I've enjoyed to be able to come to some of these premieres and meet a bunch of these people, you know, actors that you mentioned, Antonio Cerrone. I mean, you know, fantastic actor, been in many, many films. I've gotten a chance to interview some of them, like Robert Lissardo, who's, you know, acted in everything you can think of with everybody, Clint Eastwood, across the board.
Yeah, he's a great guy too, man.
Yeah. And not only that, like, we maintain, you know, a community relationship after the fact. We wish each other Merry Christmas, Happy Thanksgiving. And I have you a large part to thank for that. So I want to thank you for, you know, letting me kind of tag along a little bit on this ride, come to some of these events. I certainly appreciate it.
Well, we got more coming, bro. Sign a partner premiere coming up.
I was just in New York this past weekend. I seen that it was coming up. I said, my wife will kill me if I have to go back.
I'm not talking about this weekend Sinfest. I'm talking about the movie premiere.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you definitely let me know for the movie premiere. I will be there for that for sure, you know, to support you. And I always have and I always will continue to do so. You've been nothing but good to me. And, you know, I'm glad that God performed that miracle. He's let you spend this time with, you know, your family. And I know we're going to see big things from you, brother. And I can't wait to see it.
Awesome, man. You're the best, bro. Thank you for having me on. And
always, anytime.
Soon, bro.
All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, I am Hollywood Wade. That was Ciro DiPaggio. Make sure you go check out The Mob King. Keep your eyes peeled for Silent Partners. And we got a lot of good stuff coming. And I'll keep you updated, as always, here on Crime and Entertainment. Ciro, we appreciate it, my friend.
Boy, oh boy, I hope everybody enjoyed that episode. Be on the lookout for Silent Partners. If you have not seen Mob King, go give that a look. It's on all your major streaming apps. I mean, it's everywhere, folks. I'll keep you up to date on the details of the Silent Partners premiere. If you want to come down there and hang out, I'm sure there will be some tickets available. There will probably be some information on where you can purchase those in the coming weeks and months. I hope everyone enjoyed this episode. I hope everyone is enjoying what we're doing. I want to throw a shout out to a happy Mother's Day to all the mothers. We didn't drop one on Sunday. We didn't want nobody distracted. We want everybody spending time with their ma. Now, what you can do, moms, dads, children, kids, whoever, you can head on over to Crime and Entertainment, like, subscribe, hit that notification bell. That way you get notified every time we drop a video. We're also on all the audio platforms, Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon, anywhere you get your podcast, folks. You can find us over there. That'll do it for today's episode. Please tune in next week for an all-new episode of Crime and Entertainment.